Okay, we'll get started now. To the afternoon session, does anybody not have an agenda? Because we can get you some agendas while our next presenter is speaking. Otherwise, okay, doesn't look like anybody needs one. Okay, well, I've known this next gentleman for a number of years, too. He is the president of the NFB Writers Division. He writes these wonderful things called Thought Provokers, and he has a specific website for that. Maybe he'll give you that that web address if you want to look that up. But he was for many years until just right almost recently, just very recently, a rehabilitation counselor for the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And he was a regular field counselor. He knows a lot about employment because he's helped a lot of people get jobs. And so his name is Robert Leslie Newman. So, Bob, you want to take off here?
Hey, all. Thanks for coming. This is, you know, one of the best things you can do for yourself, because I'll tell you what, finding employment, it's up to you, my friend. You got to be the heart and soul. All right, so anyway, so I was a vocational counselor for 37 years. So I kind of feel like I learned a thing or two. And am I finished learning? No. That's why you're here, because some of the things I'll have to say are things you already know. But we're going to see how you measure up in terms of, you know, how it is I kind of put this whole scheme of getting a job together. And what I'm going to do is over the next 20-some-odd minutes is go through a two-day workshop that I put together, you know, that had to do with, well, how do you measure up to what it takes to find a job? And it's divided into four sections, four steps. I'm saying there's essentially four steps. And that is, first one is, are you ready to go to work? Second one is finding openings. The third one is making the initial contact, and the fourth one is, you know, selling yourself. So there are some little sub-steps in each one of these things. So let's just start down them. And I'm going to read you what it is, and then I'm going to ask you to help me come up with some of the things that fit, you know, under these questions. Because, you know, what I've got here is a start to a good discussion, because generally what happened with this particular workshop was I would read the question, and then in a small group, you guys would write down what you thought the answers were, you know, in Braille, in print, whatever. And then in a small group with a discussion leader, you would discuss these things, see if you could improve upon what you had down. And then we'd come back to the general session and talk about them again. So you just kind of end up knowing more than what you started out with in each case. So anyway, so here's the first step. It's, you know, are you ready to go to work? And what I'm saying here is it's kind of good to get a little, you know what an elevator speech is? In general. So what's an elevator speech? Yeah, it's a quick little, like you say, speech about yourself, about what your message is, what you're doing. And actually what you'll see that during the process, you'll have to have a couple of these different things, because it might be right away you're not sure what the job is, and that's what your message is if you're a seeker, a learner. It could be that it's, well, we'll see. But just be prepared to do a quick little talk about yourself, and it works best, my friends, if you write it out and practice it. It just doesn't work so well if you just do it off the cuff. All right. So here is what's the first thing about getting ready, I'm saying, is you got to have your blindness skills together. What do you think? Having your blindness skills. What am I talking about? Yep, travel's big, yeah. No, take... Yeah, that's part of it too, is you gotta have some of the basic stuff, but then as you get into this process, if you aren't already there knowing what you want, then you're gonna find out what some of the particulars are on the jobs that you're gonna be, applying for. So you've got to work out the alternatives ahead of time. You really can't afford a surprise, and you've got to be the person, the authority, the person that knows it when it comes to these employers. So you gotta figure out the alternatives. You're right. All right, so the second major part of getting ready here is having the rest of your life in order. So what do you think I'm talking about? Getting, having the rest of your life in order. Got your blindness in gear. What about the rest? Transportation's big, you bet. What about, you know, if you have any health issues, got to have those squared away, daycare, housing, and just what is this new income going to do to whatever your financial situation is now? I mean, there's some of us that are on SSI, SSDI, and what could happen if you just only make a little bit to lose it? Are you ahead or are you behind? All right, so it's just something you got to make a choice. You know, is it worth whatever period of time that you're going to be behind? You've got to check that out. Again, you don't really can't afford a surprise. All right. So, and here's one that kind of comes with the process too, is you got to have a job goal. You've got to, know what the qualifications are to get there, and you have to know what the career path is to get there. And that also means then you got to figure out what the alternatives are. So why are those important, you guys? Stepping stones, yeah. I mean, that's true. Someone says they want to be, someone says they want to be a customer service person, well, in some places, you know, to be a customer service person, that's like the second step in their process. You got to start out as something lower. So it just kind of, again, knowing some of these things so that you can prepare, all that. Okay. And of course, all right. So, here's another thing that's really helpful to know, you guys, is where can the type of job that you want, what kind of businesses can it be found in? Because there are different environments in which you might end up working. So, like again, customer service. Well, let's say you're a vegetarian. Let's say, would you like to be a customer service in a meat house, you know, a slaughterhouse? Would you like to maybe work for in a hospital maybe? So getting to know kind of where some of the environments are that these jobs can be found not only will help you decide which ones, but in terms of what will fit your personality best. But, of course, when it comes time to actually looking for the jobs, again, you can do some kind of class decisions of all these sorts of businesses. I don't want to be working in them. I don't think I could back their products. But these over here, I think I could do it. So, again, it helps you narrow down where to look. All right. Another thing too, you guys, is sometimes you might have all the training you need for that job, all the qualifications are there, but the jobs aren't there. So there aren't any openings for what you want. So what I'm saying is, and you tell me what you think about this, you got to know where else maybe your qualifications can take you, so that maybe you can get into the same business, but in a different type of position, maybe a lower position, a different position. But sometimes you can't get the one you want, so it's best to know what else you can do, you know, with what you've got so that you can maybe get a job because it's, what do they say? It's easier to get a job if you have a job. Yeah. All right. So that's just, again, something to be looking at. All right. So let's go to the second step is knowing where the openings are. All right. It's all about how to tap into the job market. So the first thing here I'm saying is, do you guys know what maybe like the top three methods are for finding employment? A what? Internet. The internet is one. Yeah, internet is one. What's another method, you guys? A person, which is like networking. That's good. What's another one? Yeah, cold calling, yeah. Because, you know, every doggone company is in the phone book. They all got to have a phone book. Plus, you know what else is nifty about the phone book? Is you can see what the address is. Then you can figure out, can I get there by bus? How can I get there, sort of thing? All right, and should you just rely on one method for finding employment? What do you think? Yeah, it's that old thing about all of the more irons you get in the fire, you know, the better type of thing, more things you got going for you. You know, job clubs are mighty good too. But again, you got to figure out what methods kind of fit your personality. But again, you got to take some chances, got to learn some new stuff. All right. So the next one here is, I'm trying to just read with one hand here. I'm usually more of a two-handed person here. What is this? Okay. Here's a question for you. Kind of get the odds on your side is, I'll ask you a question. Where are the majority of the jobs? Are they, highest number of jobs? Are they in big business, middle-sized business, or small business? Yeah, they actually are. Well, they're still out there. That's good. That's good. Absolutely. All right. Then knowing the different kind of resources, tools you can use, while you're looking for a job. We talked about methods before, but now we're talking about specific tools. I mean, friends can be a tool, but what else are actual tools, that can be used? The internet can be a tool, sure. Yeah, sure. Find someone who's actually doing stuff. But what other kind of tools? I actually mentioned one, the phone book. There's professional journals. Newspaper can be one, sure. Yeah, professional associations, that's good, yeah. Employment agencies, actually. Job fairs, yeah, that's good. All right, so again, examining what the resources are, which ones will work best for you and that sort of thing. So anyway, okay, and you got to use, do you just stick with one or do you try to use a whole bunch of different tools, guys? Yeah, as much as possible, really. All right. Because again, getting a job is a full-time job if you're really, really serious about it. So here's another thing. A resume. You all know what resumes are, right? Does everybody need a resume? There probably are some jobs you bet that you will apply for where they do not require a resume, but all right. But of course, it's just the process of putting one together helps you get what together? Yeah, that's good. Your ducks in a row. So here's the question. If you guys are going to go for a job that requires a resume, what do you know about, why and how would you make that resume point towards the specific job position that you're applying for? Is that a good thing to do? Or does a general resume do it? And one of the key ways of doing it, you guys, really, is you take the job description that from the employer, you look at the phrases, the specific skill wording that they use. And if you've got anything that resembles that, then you would want to use their words, not your words. And you know why? Do you know that many, many employers nowadays, they have a job description, you bet, but they've got a scorecard. There are certain things they're looking for when they're going through the applications. There are certain phrases they're looking for, certain skills that are specific to what they want. And, of course, they write those things out for you pretty clear in the job description. And the bigger companies, what some of them do, they'll take and scan your resume. And they've got software that looks for key phrases. And if you don't have them, then they're not interested in you. And I sat in on several hiring processes where in the Commission for the Blind, Visually Impaired. And again, we had a job tool that we went by looking for key phrases. And if the person didn't have a certain number of them, we put them in the pile. Sorry, that sort of thing. What's that? Yeah, here's Dick for a second.
Oh, just, I tell people this is almost, insulting people's intelligence, but it works so well. Just, if you see a job announcement, take the words in the job announcement. Move the words in the job announcement to your resume to the extent that you can do that ethically, and then send that in. Very often, whether they do individuals, what you have is, resume screeners will sit there with a job description on the left-hand side, the resume and right-hand, the pile of stack of resumes on the right-hand side, and they'll check and see which looks like which. The computer systems do that in a more automated fashion. So use their words. I mean, don't just put down nonsense, but, you know, personalize them. But to the extent you can, use their words and phrases, and it really actually does work extremely well.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, yeah, believe me, these are just starts. Yeah, you can find more information about, you know, Yeah, I wasn't here for that part. I was on a panel, but yeah, but if others that were here must have heard that. But just informational interviews. You guys know the value of an informational interview? You ever used one? Done one? So, you know, I kind of like them. It teaches you how to talk to these people, how to ask questions, and it really kind of helps you with your nerves if you have nerves about interviewing. And it's, you know, it's the gloves are off. Because it's not a real interview, I've seen some questions getting asked and some information being freely given that really wouldn't happen during a normal interview. Plus, you can just, like I say, really learn a lot about the company and find out what really motivates them and what they look for. You can ask some of those questions during an informational interview. Plus, again, if you need to find out more about their particular job so you can figure out the alternatives, then you can be better prepared. So informational interviews, it's an extra step, but it's one that's really for fact-finding and for just getting that experience. You really can't beat them. And they can really can be a pretty doggone useful tool. So informational interview. And then you'd want to get your, you know, questions written down before you go in. You probably want to, just like any kind of a employer, if you're going to go interview, find out what you can find out about them so that you can ask some intelligent questions. Anyway, so here it is, guys. We're talking about step three now. It's the initial contact, make the initial contact. So this is, again, where some of this practicing what you're going to say about yourself is going to be good. So, and this first one is, you know, if you're going to make the first contact by phone, it might be this cold calling thing, you know, where you're calling up, do you have any openings? And so, again, it's just one of those deals where it pays to write out what you're going to say and practice it so that when you say it, it comes out well. Because you only have a first chance to make that first impression, you know? Even the phone ones count. And then here, secondly, this really gets kind of complex, this next part, is if they say they've got an opening, they say, well, sure, come on in. You know, we've got some, you know, testing we'll do, blah, blah, blah. So then you got to stop and say to yourself, if you're a person that's going to need some accommodation, right there, you got to make a decision. You know, what are you going to say? Are you going to disclose the fact that you're visually impaired, blind, that you're going to need some whatever? You know, I, as a vocational counselor, I usually say, yeah, you got to talk about your blindness up front. You don't want to do it until it's time. You've got to, because, you know, it's too easy to, you know, set you aside if they don't have never really dealt with the blindness before, if they just see it written. So, all right. So if you find out there's an opening, this is what I say, you guys, is out of respect for them. If you're really serious about doing your best, you got to have accommodations. So you just got to, again, work out how you're going to say this. You know, that, hey, you know, I'm visually impaired, I'm blind, and I would need a reader. And this is how I've done it in the past. You give them options, because some of these outfits have not dealt with the blind, have not had to make these accommodations, so they're learning. And if you can help them in a real reasonable way, because you are talking like, hey, I've done this, this works, that works, you know, we can do these different things, you know. Anyway, so you got to work out part of what you're going to say about this disclosure bit. And again, it's just been my experience. It's just better to hit them up front, because you know what? If they're going to want you because you're blind, I'd almost rather find it out up front pretty quick rather than have them play games with me, you know? Anyway, plus, I think a lot of people are just pretty respectful of others. And if you come across like, again, a real adult, a real, you know what the heck you're about and stuff, I think that helps sway them. All right. Then the next thing is, you know, how to fill out, you got to know how to fill an application. And of course, what are some of the rules about filling out an application, you guys? Just what are some of the simple rules? Well, yeah, they usually like a pen, yeah. And a what? Oh, yeah. That's what a resume actually can do sometimes when you find out you don't really need one. Because it has that information. A job book, some people call them. Another form of it is like a portfolio where you'd have copies of recommendation letters, maybe some of the things you, depends on what you're going for, some samples of your work, whatever. But yeah, you got to walk in there and have this data so that you can be an easy transfer over rather than sitting there scratching your head and maybe getting people's wrong telephone numbers and all that kind of stuff. Then there's another thing about the application, you guys, is again, knowing what they're looking for, you can make that application speak from you to that job. If you've got some of the things they're looking for, you got to use their language, throw it back at them, because again, that's going to be one of those evaluation tools. You know, they're going to look to see, do you have, you know, kind of what they're looking for. If you know what they say? They say that the average HR person takes about 15 seconds for a resume. You know what section they look at first? Do you think it's education? Do you think it's your resume? Well, what do you think it is? Yeah, so yeah, they look at that first. So again, they're looking for key things that relates to what they're looking for. So again, you've got to do each application specific to the job, you know, that you're going for. It's just something you gotta do. All right. The next thing here is, let's see, what is the value of we already said that. The job portfolio thing. That's the job book, the cheat sheet, whatever you want to call it. Okay, let's see. What about keeping track of where you've been, who you talked to, when, what the next steps are? How would that help you in looking for a job? Yeah, that's good. If you want to call back, talk to the same person you talked to before. It's kind of a follow-up thing. Of course, the date tells you, I talked to them 2 weeks ago. It's about time to check in with them again. Or even, it's kind of nice to even ask them, well, when can I check back with you? Well, why don't you call back? Sometimes they'll say anytime. Sometimes they'll give you, like, well, give them 2 weeks. Anyway, taking notes like that helps you to, like you say, keep organized and keep on top of things. Step four, I forgot when I looked at this, I proofed this the other day, I noticed that the step four didn't have a blank line above it. All right, so we're talking about step four, and that's, selling yourself. What's the way to get prepared about to sell yourself in an interview? We're talking about an interview, right? So what can you do to get prepared for that? Yeah, those are all good. Then what about actually... I guess I want to say practicing your interviewing skills. What can you do? Have you guys ever looked on the internet or get from your counselors, whatever? There are collections of kind of commonly used interview questions that you will be asked. Get your hands on that. And, of course, think about what job you're going towards and stuff, because some of these questions won't relate to you, but practicing some of the potential questions you may be asked is a good thing. Mock interviews, having someone actually interview you is a good thing. So it's teaching you to think on your feet. And if you actually get some of these questions that are being used, and I've seen a lot of these questions, they really do use, one company to the next, they really do use a lot of these same questions. So anyway, it just gives you a head start to know how to phrase what you're going to say. And again, what about disclosure during your interview? How much do you think you ought to tell people about your blindness during the interview? How would you represent all that stuff? So then, okay, let's say you're walking with your cane, but if you don't really ever talk about it, they look at you and you walk out at the end. It was never talked. Was that a good interview? So what would you say are some key things about things you can say, do in your interview about your blindness? That's good. Yeah. Because you know what? That's great. I mean, that really is. Because it's your one and only chance to educate them if that's what's being needed, you know. Because they're listening to, believe me, you guys, they're really, when it comes down to it, they're going to look at the, like, 3-4 people that have the qualifications they're looking for. And then a lot of times the way they really narrow it down is they kind of look at the character and how that person represented themselves. Do they really want to have that kind of a person, you know, on their staff? So, again, if you are at all making them nervous to begin with, if you can help them to become comfortable and to understand how you do things, they will appreciate that. The more you can point out how you do things relating to how they, you know, have their job structured. Of course, you won't know that all that to begin with, but that's where you can ask some specific questions. All right, I understand that you have software here that I'm going to have to use, you know, to perform part of my job. And then you could ask some questions about, you know, is that off-the-shelf stuff? Is that, well, again, it depends, but there are just some questions that you can ask them. And, of course, you're the ones that are going to know where there's going to be some, hopefully you'll have some backup, some assistance. And that's where you'd have an opportunity to say, yeah, I'm a client of the so-and-so, whatever, and there's staff there that can, you know, test out your computer system or just whatever, or can help pay for software, adaptive equipment, that sort of stuff. So, again, if you have any support, that's where it would be important for you to bring that forth because, again, the employer would not feel like they're the one and only, you know, person all of a sudden that's responsible for all this new stuff, if that's what the situation is. You know, they appreciate the fact that you are a problem solver. You come in with answers. So anyway, your confidence and stuff will help them to get over any kind of nervousness they've had because most people really are open to learn. They're open to learn. The last thing I've got down here is, do you think it's important? What about sending a thank you to who it was that interviewed you? Think that's a good thing, bad thing? Or... Yeah, it's an extra step that most people don't take. I know one person for sure that's exactly what the HR person told him when he got the job was, you know what, you were the only one that sent me a thank you letter. You know, all things equal, you know, you're blind. You know, I got that part. You helped me understand that part. But you were the only one that sent me a little, you know, thank you note. All right, so we had a half hour to do this. We just did it. You know, thanks for helping me fill in the blanks. But again, there's it's a process, and what we touched on was pretty much the full story, but there's always a little details and tweaks that can be done to make it even better thing. Oh, is that? Well, of course, you'd have to find out if the company will allow you to put a thumb drive in there. Yeah, because that's been my experience actually. Well, plus you could put another little plug in for yourself. You know, hey, if I'm chosen, I really, you know, you have something to offer, just something, another plug for yourself. So, yeah, sure, thank them, whatever, but then put in a little plug for yourself, too. That works. You know, another nifty thing to you guys, those of you who use adaptive equipment, you know, take it along. If you have a note taker, whatever, a demonstration, whatever, you know. Because, you know, people like gadgets, and it's just another way you explain how you would do things. You know, don't be shy to do, even while you're waiting in the interview room. I mean, if you had, again, a large print magazine, you know, that's, I don't mean something fluff type magazine, but something that might relate to even what you're applying for, you know, something that, anyway, it shows that you are a reader, a thinker, you're a Braille magazine, that can be good.
May I, or how would you say that? I'm an open person, and I would say I would love to have this job. When can I start, or how would I go along doing that?
Well, I think you said it perfectly. Yeah, I'd love to go to work for you. I mean, be enthusiastic. They notice, you know, enthusiasm. A lot of people say, oh, okay, thank you very much for the interview, and go on. And if somebody say, if you say, geez, that sounds like a great job. I would love to go to work for you. You know, when can I start? Or something along those lines. I mean, you know, obviously you don't want to appear to be twisting your arm too hard, but you got to convey to them, yeah, I like this. This sounds like fun. I'd love to do this job. I think I could do a really good job for you. So, yeah, I'd like to go to work for you. But oddly enough, most people won't do it in any way, shape, or form. Bizarre, but true. Other questions here?
I'm attending Brian's training at BISM, and I have to put something on my resume for that block of time. So they're going to know prior to an interview that I'm blind. Is that what should happen, or should you just go in there cold and see them and...
Well, if you're applying for a job at an agency dealing with the blind, it would be a great thing to put down. Of course, that's I'm being funny a little bit, but it would be there. So, Dick, what do you tell people about breaks? I'm not sure. Dick, what have you seen nowadays? Is breaks in people's employment as big of an issue as it once was?
No, actually, it is not. I mean, the job market's been so iffy in the past couple of years, you know, I think everybody expects that. And even for sighted people, the average time that it takes to find a new professional job is stretching out to almost 9 months now, you know. So people are going to make the assumption that you've just been looking for work or you're in between jobs and so on and so forth. So it really hasn't been an issue, you know, from anybody I've seen. Back in the era when you could just walk from one job into the other, yeah, you know, gaps in your employment were a big deal. But I don't think it is as much anymore today.
I'm going to defer to the person ahead of me. And then if you would please get to that informational interview, do you call and ask for an informational interview? Could you expound on that just a little further?
All right, so yeah, you can... A lot of companies will do this. So you would call and ask for an informational interview. I mean, you could even just describe your situation. You know, hey, you know, I recently went blind. If that's your story, if I recently went blind and I'm getting back in the job market, I've got, you know, my blindness training pretty much squared away. I'm looking. So just, you know, the companies will be willing to help fill in, you know, some of the things you need to know to get back on your feet. So, yeah, you call and ask for one. And usually it does work best if you explain why, because I don't think I don't know if you really need to explain why, but I guess I always did.
Do not, under any conditions, allow them to turn your informational interview into a job interview, which will happen if you talk to human resource people. They'll start asking you questions, and you just have to say very politely, no, that's fine, enough about me. You know, I want to know about this job. I want to know about your company. And informational interviews have sort of gotten a bad rap because so many people try to use those as a sneaky way of getting a job interview. And so if you say, no, this is really an informational interview. Second thing about an informational interview, people forget what they say to you. So you turn around a month later, you apply, and God, you're a genius. You know everything about the company. You know, so I've had people go out, do an informational interview, wait a month, go and apply for a job there. It works like a charm. Joe here.
In terms of the blindness, it depends on whether you're walking in or you've sent in a resume and they've called you. I don't tell them I'm blind until the end of the first phone call or the second phone call or until the phone call in which they say to me, "Hey, Joe, we've had a great conversation. We'd like to bring you in and do an in-person interview." At that point, I say, "You know what, Bill, Jerry, that's really great. I really want to come in. I love your company. I love everything you said. One more thing I have to share for you, though. I'm visually impaired. Now, I can use the computer, as you can see. I got great mobility skills, yada, 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 but I do have a visual impairment. In no way will it prevent me from doing the job, but I don't want to surprise you when I come in. Because I think if I walked into the office and they knew nothing and I had my white cane, I think the shock value would be so great that I don't think they would. I think they might feel that I lied or at least misled them, especially if they've flown me across the country for that interview.
The one thing, though, I would add to that is before you tell them that you're blind, confirm that you have the interview. That way they can't weasel out and say, "Oh, my God, you know, it's just a schedule thing," and so on and so forth. So nail down the interview and then talk. There's a lady over here that wants to ask a question.
Yes, kind of getting back to the lag of time, but also, what if you go to a school for the blind? What are you supposed to put for your high school if one is, you know, let's say they're not going to college, they want to find a job, because a lot of people, you know, if they go to college, they don't necessarily put their high school on their resume, but job applications sometimes ask what high school you go to. But if you aren't going to college and you're just going, you're looking for work after high school, and you went to such and such high school for the blind, how are you supposed to deal with that? You can't lie about where you went to high school.
Use initials. That's what I tell people. Just
use initials.
Okay. Let them figure it out on their own later. Okay, we got to wrap this up. We can take one more question.
All right.
And
Joe, you have another?
Well, my comment would be I went to the Hadley School. I wouldn't add for the blind. I would leave that off. Or I went to Arizona School, and I'd leave off for the blind as an example, because I don't think they need to know it before they even made a decision to bring in.
All right. Well, thank you, Robert. You did great.
Well, hey, thanks for the assist, you guys.
Okay. And you're welcome to stick around here. Okay. All right. Are both of these working okay?
Yes.
Okay. This next thing, framing blindness, how you can sell yourself as equal to or better than a sighted employee. Framing blindness is actually something that came from Robert's Thought Provoker website, which I recommend to people. First of all, the Good to Read. Second of all, if you're working with blind people, they cover all kinds of different subjects about blindness, and, you know, as their term, they're thought provokers. You know, you can use them in classes and do some discussion. And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to start out my presentation with just by reading you a thought provoker. Then I may ask you a question or two about it afterwards. Thought provoker number 149, framing blindness. "Sir, I'm looking for a job. I heard you have several openings. As you can see," the young blind man held up his white cane in emphasis as he addressed the business owner, "I am blind, and because of it, I'm having a very tough time getting employment. Did you know that nearly 80% of the blind are unemployed? For centuries, blindness has been viewed as the worst handicap a human can have, but it is all a lie, a great misunderstanding. With the right tools," raising his cane again, a cane or dog guide, "and with Braille or for some large print and other blindness skills, we can do most jobs just as good as a sighted person. But we don't usually get a chance to prove it," lifting the cane for a third time. "Usually people can't see past this, and we get pity, doubting thoughts, and seldom an equal chance. Would you give me a try in one of your job openings?" So what do you think the response of the employer was? Okay. Yeah. Okay, excellent response. So I'm going to read this on because it goes on here. And so the employer says, "No, I won't, and I'm going to tell you why." The business owner, earnest tone in his voice, palms flat on the countertop, leaned forward. "I listened to you, heard every word, processed the difficulties you laid out concerning the non-acceptance and unemployment of the wine, but think about how you framed your story and what you set me up to think. You walked in, gave me the woes about being blind, hit me with 5 negatives to 1 positive, and you want me to think you've got what I'm looking for in an employee?" Slapping a palm on the countertop in emphasis, the employer said, "But this is what I will consider. I want you to go back outside, take a minute to think about how you need to present yourself to me, then come back in and try your spiel again. But concentrate on telling me what you can do." Surprised at the businessman's response, the blind guy nodded, accepting the challenge, turned, and using the best cane technique he had, exited the building. Moments later, he came back in. "Sir, you are looking to hire a customer service representative. I believe I have the skills to fill the position," indicating the cane in his hand. "As you can see, I am blind, and if you would hear me out, I would like to explain how I feel I can make this a success." Getting a go-ahead sound, he continued, "Your job ad listed a requirement of competency with a PC. I use a PC every day. And how it works for me, I use what is called screen reading software. It's voice output. This software will usually work with most computer applications. And if we find out that it doesn't work right out of the box with your company system, we could call my state rehab counselor and she can have her IT specialist come in and evaluate your system and tweak my special software to work with yours. Second, you require customer service experience, and though I haven't been paid to perform that duty, I've had a couple of volunteer positions in which customer service was part of my responsibilities." Okay, I'll stop again and ask you a question. What do you think the employer's response was or should be? Okay, boy, you're an astute bunch here. The employer says, "The answer is still no. Better, but still not good enough. I now know that you have abilities, special tools, and some backup to aid you if you need technical assistance. However, though I'm feeling there is some employment potential, it appears to come with an equal weight of potential problems that I would have to overcome. So no again. Go back out, rethink, and come back in and convince me that you are the best person for the job." Not fully surprised, though somewhat dismayed, yet encouraged, the blind guy nodded, turned, and exited the building. Minutes later, he came back in. "Sir," reaching out his right hand to give a shake and greeting, "my name is John. You have an opening for a customer service rep. It is one of my best skills, and I want to talk to you about hiring me for the job. I'm a very competent PC user. I have references I will present that will vouch for my ability and reliability to be at work every day on time and that I always give 110% to the job. May I talk to you about your position?" "Yes, let's talk," responded the business owner. Okay. I think a lot of times, I don't know if sometimes I use fight analogies. I think a lot of times if you're blind, you tend to lead with your jaw, which if you've ever been in a fight is not a really good, you know, idea. If you've ever been in a fist fight, you protect your face. You know, you don't stick your jaw out because somebody will knock you out cold. And so if you look at this particular guy, he let out with, you know, almost the worst presentation possible. You know, it's a welfare approach, you know, all kinds of negatives and so on and so forth. And the, you know, the please, please, please give me, you know, I'm discriminated against, I'm treated horribly, please will you give me a job? Well, that's not going to work with employers. I mean, he gathered a little bit more information on the second, helped a little bit, not good enough. Third, the one thing I noticed about the third is that's the only time he told the person his name, if you think about it. He personalized it. You know, he said, "Hi, I am such and so. You know, I have this and that and the other." And so he got away from just kind of talking in terms of you know, blindness issues, and he talked instead about what he had in the way of skills and what he could bring to the employer, which is the most effective presentation. I mean, if you use a white cane, the employer is going to know that you're blind, and that will be some issue. There will be some issues regarding to that, which you'll have to deal with. But first, the employer wants to know, what can you do for me? You know, why should I hire you? Why are you better than some of the other people I should hire? And I think sometimes people don't think, you know, in terms of that. So this is kind of a little talk that hopefully will help people think a little bit more in that direction. Okay, so at the risk of oversimplifying things, I would say that if an employer has never dealt with a blind person before, when you walk into that job interview, the employer is going to see problem written all over you. I mean, because people are conditioned to think blind people need help, blind people need extra this, blind people need extra time, you're going to have to help this person, etc. So the employer sees problem, more work, etc. Now your perspective is going to be different. You're going to see, I'm the solution to your problem. I'm going to make it possible for you to have less work. You know, I'm the answer to all your problems. But as I tell my students at Blind Incorporated, there's somewhat of a gap between the two things. So you've got to figure a way to jump over that gap. And Robert's article, you know, his thought provoker showed one way. You know, I focus on what you can bring to the employer. Don't deal with any negative stuff. Deal with, you know, how you can help that person. And again, that person's not stupid. They'll realize, you know, what you say, and then you'll start them headed in the direction of how you can help them. So I think a lot of people still think in terms of the welfare concept about blindness, and isn't anybody going to hire anybody because they feel sorry for them or because, you know, because of that kind of charity impulse. I tell people there's no real charity when it comes to employment. You know, you got to have what the person needs, and if you don't have what the person needs, they're not going to hire you. And if you don't have what they need and somehow they hire you, you're not going to be around for very long. Okay, now the good news is that everybody in the room has a lot more to offer than perhaps you even realize. So I wanted to talk about how do you present blindness, you know, in a positive fashion. I think there's two main arguments that you can use to convince an employer to hire you as a blind person. The first of those is what I refer to and what we've referred to for years in the Federation as the characteristic argument. The second, which is more personal, it's something I've worked on for years, is called the superior argument. So let's take the characteristic argument first. One of the problems that people make, both blind people interviewing for jobs and employers interviewing blind people, is they think blindness trumps everything else. Like, okay, well, I can do this and this and this, but I'm blind or you're blind, whatever, you know, whichever perspective. So somehow that blindness invalidates every single personal characteristic that you have in your life. Sometimes that's, the character in Robert's thought provoker said, you know, not looking beyond the white cane. You know, that's an example of it. But if you look at characteristics, let's say, well, you're blind, but let's say you're the most completely charming person on the face of the earth. And let's say the sighted people you're competing with have the personality of a stump. Is your delightful personality versus the other person's stump personality going to make it more likely for you to be hired in a public contact position? I think that's the case. And one of the things about a competitive process like hiring is you don't know what the other person has going for them or not. So you may actually have, you know, in total, far better characteristics. Are you punctual? Do you have really good solid work experience? If you don't have really good solid work experience, do you have solid values, like what David Tiki was talking about, ethics, you know, principles, and so on and so forth? Do you have specific talents or skills? Do you have interesting hobbies or attributes about you that the employer thinks would add to the organization as a whole? And a lot of people think, no, hobbies aren't important. But, yeah, they can be important. They can be a way of finding common ground. They're not the most important thing that you can put in a resume, but they are important. So basically, you know, the principle behind this argument is that everybody has a bunch of characteristics. If you have a superior bunch of characteristics or more good characteristics than the people with whom you're competing, I think it's more likely that you can be hired than the people with whom they're competing. Now, obviously, some people are going to look at the blindness and they're not going to be sold no matter what. Well, okay, weed them out. But in my opinion and my recent experience, there are an equal number of people who will see you for what you are. You know, they, if you come in and say, I can do this job, they'll take it face value. And as has always been the case, there's a big middle ground of people who are kind of open-minded, basically. They don't know, they're confused, they don't understand, and they want to be convinced. And so, the first group you can't do anything with anyway, so just thank them for the interview and go away and think, oh, God, I'm glad I don't have to work there. Second group, you know, that's a shoe-in. You'll be surprised, but I've had people just get hired, you know, with, where blindness wasn't even an issue in the interview. And then the third group, you know, of course, you're going to have to do some convincing, but keep always the characteristic argument in place, and don't ever, ever assume that because you're blind, that wipes out every single other personal characteristic you have. And don't ever think that's the only thing the employer is looking for, because they could be looking for lots and lots of things. If somebody's stealing, you know, if they have people who steal, if they have people who don't show up, you know, on time, if they have people who have poor customer service skills, and you have those things that they lack, they're going to be far more likely to do that. So, you know, you want to say something like, well, I'm blind, but that's one of my characteristics, and here's a whole bunch of other characteristics, and I think these things are real strengths that I can use in terms of employment. Okay, second argument, and that argument works really well. People have been using it effectively for years. Second argument is what I call the superior argument. This is going to require a little bit more thinking on everybody's part, but I think once we get into it, you'll like it some. I think in many ways blind people are better than sighted people on the job. I know that's kind of a radical concept, but I believe it, you know, completely to be true. Can any of you in this room think of one way in which a blind person is superior to a sighted person? Okay, listening. More aware. Now, some people would disagree with that, but I agree with you totally. More aware. Higher motivation, very definitely. Better recall. I'll give you an example of this. When I was running the orientation center of the New Mexico Commission for the Blind, the students had, we have a graduate here. We took turns selling snacks over the noon hour, and I took my turn along with everybody else, and I'm a sighted person. And so the students, we had this glass case with slanting shelves in it, you know, which was designed for, you know, sighted people go look in the glass case and see what the product was. And the students, very quickly figured out that the best way to do that was just memorize where everything was. And so the students memorized where everything was. And somebody come up and say, well, you know, I'd like a Butterfinger bar. And they reach right in and say, here, here's a Butterfinger bar. I'm a sighted person. I could have done the same thing. What did I choose to do? I tried to go around the other side and look in the glass and tell where it was and then fish it out. Sight can make you lazy. You know, sometimes, you know, if you're so used to doing using eyesight for something, when you run into a time when eyesight doesn't work, then you get weak. And your average blind person knows you got to memorize stuff. I mean, you know, you just can't, you know, if you throw your car keys down someplace or house keys or whatever keys you have, and you spend a half an hour looking for the things because you can't remember where you threw them down, you're going to remember the second time, or you're going to have an organized type of thing. I mean, in a sense, dealing successfully with blindness forces you into patterns of organization and thinking, assuming you're a competent person, that most people don't have. And I think those patterns of organization and thinking can be stronger. Any other suggestions? Better problem solvers. That's great. What is being successful about blindness like? You have to solve problems, right? You walk into a new situation, you got all this sighted stuff here around you, you got to figure out, how am I going to do this stuff? And so you come up with creative solutions. You know, you taxi driver drops you off 5 blocks from where you want to be, and you realize, oh my God, I'm not, you know, at where I need to be. Okay, in a hurry, you're going to have to figure out how to get from point A to point B, and that doesn't involve turning around calling a taxi back to come and, you know, take you 4 blocks. You've got to do that. I mean, these are the kind of things that blind people learn how to do, and with experience, you get to be experts, you know, in that kind of problem solving. So, yeah, I'd agree, Robert. Blind people are a heck of a lot better solving problems than sighted people, and they solve them creatively, too. You know, again, the experience of dealing with blindness forces you to be more creative. Let me throw out something else here. We'll take more ideas, but let me throw out something. Who operates a computer faster, a sighted person using a mouse and clicky little things, or a blind person that uses keystroke commands? Okay.
Blind person's using keystrokes.
Did how many of you thought before this exact moment to say, hey, because I'm blind, I'm faster at using a computer than sighted people? Have you thought of that? Will you think of it in the future? Now, a point I made earlier with the candy episode, a sighted person can learn keystrokes. I mean, that's even depicted, you know, on the screen. You have these little letters with lines under them, and they either mean control whatever letter or Alt, you know, whatever letter, and you can jump in, you know, in keystrokes and so on and so forth. Sighted people can learn this stuff, but the reason why the mouse and graphical user interfaces were developed is because sighted people are lazy and they didn't want to memorize keystrokes, and so people came along with lots of pictures and an easy way to do it so that everybody could just sit down and operate a computer right from the get-go, but you know, nobody factored in the notion that it's actually slower to do things that way. So that's a way in which, you know, needing to deal with the world as a blind person actually makes you stronger. Yeah, if you want to try the test of the lady from New Mexico here, you'll come up with the same results. You know, you'll whip them and they'll say, oh my God, you know, I never thought a blind person was better than a sighted person. Hang on, Peter wants to say something, but I'll get back to the rest of you. Go ahead.
I'm aware of several situations of, and I think this was true at the Marriott Corporation, and we knew somebody else who worked at a company where they did not permit the use of the mouse on the job. And these were sighted people doing this type of work. So obviously there are employers who are catching on to the fact that the graphical user interface is actually an inefficient means for interacting with a computer. And they require all of their employees, you'll be either sighted or blind, to interact with their PCs using the keyboard.
At the risk of making a pun, do you think something's really going to be faster if it's GUI? Let's say dealing with adversity. I mentioned that earlier. You have sighted people. They're out in the world. You know, yeah, some of them may have dealt with adversity. Do you think a person who's lost their eyesight and worked their way through the whole process of coming to believe in themselves again and developing new alternative techniques and developing, you know, new skills and coming up with new creative ways of using things, do you think something like that actually makes a person stronger? Yeah, it's the old saying, you know, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Well, there's nobody in this room that's dead here, at least that I know of. So it must have made people stronger here. Other ideas. I use that agreement a lot when I'm placing blind people in cleaning jobs. You know, basically the argument in a nutshell is, okay, sighted person walks into a room, they look around, oh, okay, doesn't look too dirty, I'll skip that today, I'll go on to something else. Well, you can't see germs, you can't see little specks of dust, you can't see any of that kind of stuff. And so when you get to the point where you can walk into a room and see it, it's really, really dirty. A blind person instead, you know, if you have to clean a bathroom, you clean a bathroom. You know, you do what needs to be done. You go on to the next. If you miss a spot, that's fine. You're going to come back and catch it the next day. You know, sighted people, they may miss a spot and not see it for days, you know, on end. So, you know, I make the argument a blind person's actually a better cleaner, more efficient, you know, more sanitary, you know, et cetera, because of the fact that they're blind and they don't have that luxury of looking around the room and saying, oh, yeah, I don't have to clean that today. Okay. I've reached the time to the end of my presentation, so I do have a homework assignment for all of you. I want you to go home or back up to your rooms or wherever you go. It's definitely when you get home, would be the latest. And I want you to think of every single way in which you as a blind person are superior to a sighted person. And I want you to write those things down, and I want you to use them in your job interviews, because it will blow them away. You know, they will never, ever assume that a blind person is better than a sighted person in any way. And you know better now, so please go ahead and do that. Okay, now we move on to the afternoon job exchange and announcements. I know we had the announcements, but let's see if anybody has any jobs that they know of. That they may want to announce, or you know, if you're looking for a job and you want to let people know what your skills are, please go right ahead. Okay, go ahead.
3 to 4 teachers of the blind, 2 of them in our outreach department and 1 in our school, residential school, possibly 2 in our residential school. In the outreach department, one of them would be a short course instructor, teaching essentially short courses, much like our NFB centers, and one would be a multiple disability specialist, and so you should have a vision certification. Secondly, we are having a you're going to need that for licensing. I know that's the way the state is. The second one would be in our school, and it would be a general teacher looking for a residential person, our residential staff, and so you'd work in the dorms, and possibly we're looking for a nurse as well. So this is in Janesville, Wisconsin. All right, somebody likes the Ville, and that's just south of Madison, just north of Rockford, Illinois. So if you're interested, my number 608-758-4925. Also, please be looking at our website, just Google WCBVI, Wisconsin Center for Blind and Visually Impaired, and the jobs will be on there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And we have our rehab counselor friend down front here.
Hello. In the state of Florida, Division of Blind Services has posted a position for a counselor in Orlando. And there will be another position probably posted in January or February. But as of right now, there is a position that's posted on, it's called People First, is our state, website that lists all the state positions. But if you, I can email you the posting directly if you want to email me at Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y dot J-A-M-E-S at D-B-S dot F-L-D-O-E dot org. And there is also a position for a district administrator in the Jacksonville office. That Jacksonville is in Northeast Florida. Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y dot J-A-M-E-S at, yeah, J-A-M-E-S at D-B-S, that's for, stands for Division of Blind Services, dot F-L-D-O-E, that stands for Florida Department of Education, dot org. And I get postings. We get postings sometimes before they're right before they're put on the People First website. But you can also Google People First and Florida, and it will come up. And you can create an account as a job seeker, and you can put in, there are loads of different fields. You can put in what type of position you're looking for, whether it be rehab counseling, administrative, agricultural, whatever. If there's a state position, it's on there. You fill out an application, and then you can edit your application, but you don't have to fill out an application every time you apply to a job. You keep the same application is saved in there. There are some accessibility issues with ZoomText and JAWS users, but they're always working on it. But for the rehab counselor position, you do have to have a master's in rehabilitation counseling or guidance counseling.
All right. Do you want to give people your phone or email if they have questions?
Yeah, I just gave them my email.
Okay. Sorry. I was distracted there for a moment. Okay, gentlemen here.
All right. My name is Brian Mackey from New Jersey. I am currently looking for a data entry, bookkeeping, entry-level accounting position. I recently graduated from a computerized accounting program at a trade school, so you can contact me either via email, which is bmackey88@gmail.com, or you can, and I do have resumes, both in print and in braille.
Mary Donahue, I'm Pete's other half, if you haven't known. I wanted to announce, I can't, it's not technically open yet, but on Thursday, my immediate supervisor, Vivian Secchi, who is manager of Braille operations at Education Service Center Region 20 in San Antonio, Texas, left to take a job at Foundation for Blind Children in Phoenix. So her position will be open, hopefully after the end of the fiscal year. Right now we're in a hiring freeze, so we aren't hiring anybody, mainly reassigning. But it is specialized. You'll need to know something about Braille transcribing and proofreading and Braille production, equipment used, something about Duxbury translation or Braille 2000. You'll need to know something about that, and you need to know how to handle people, lots of people skills, and some kind of administration work too. And my home email is Braille, B-R-A-I-L-L-E, at S-A-T-X dot R-R dot com. Otherwise, I am in room 9311 in this hotel. And also, I'm opening to mentoring anybody if they'd like to become a transcriber or proofreader, what's involved, and things like that. I'll be talking at the Blind Office Professionals meeting tonight. If you're going to be going into customer service, that meeting's for you. Or if you want to be a proofreader, it's at 7 in Suwannee 19. Thank you.
I don't know the specifics about the jobs per se, but while I was doing some research, looking at things before coming here. The state of North Dakota has the lowest unemployment rate in the United States. It's 3.1%. On their website for the state of North Dakota, employment process, they have listed 17,000 job openings, all the full gamut of everything you want. If you know anything about computer operations or that relate to the oil industry, there's an instant job there starting in the $40,000 to $50,000 a year range going up.
And some of you may think, well, why would I move to North Dakota? Actually, North Dakota, it has an excellent economy. They are actively looking for people throughout the state. In Fargo, North Dakota, young people from Minneapolis move to Fargo, North Dakota, because they think it's a cooler place to live than Minneapolis for younger people. So don't overlook something just because of any image you may have. It's a great state.
Make sure to get your winter woolies if you're moving up there. I forgot to mention one other position that's posted now is a supervisor at the Talking Book Library in Daytona Beach, Florida, which is about maybe an hour. Yeah, a lot more warmer. There's a beach nearby, and the Talking Book Library is right near Division of Blind Services and their state residential rehab center.
Thank you, and I hope everybody here is subscribed to the jobs listserv, the NFB jobs listserv, and it doesn't hurt to be subscribed to the rehab listserv. You don't have to be a rehab counselor to do that. And if you hear stuff like that, post it on to the listserv, because people from all over the country look at that. Potential employers look at that. You know, other blind people look at that. It's a really good way to pass information along. Don.
I did speak this morning a little bit, but I want to give you my elevator speech if you're on a really, really tall building. There are still a lot of opportunities in the field of piano technology for the blind. That's piano tuning and repair. I say it's the second oldest profession in the world. There have been blind people tuning and repairing pianos for over 150 years and doing it very successfully. I presented at the rehab meeting last year, and one of the questions I got was, well, you know, this all sounds really good, but can you give us some facts? So I gathered some facts together, and I have some articles, if anybody's interested, that I can hand out. I have them in Braille and print and on CD-ROM, and I'll be at the rehabilitation meeting on Tuesday, and also at 3:15 on Tuesday in the Pensacola G1, which is a change from what the agenda says, I will be tuning a piano and talking about what's involved, and I'd love to have people come and look. Just a few facts. In 1948, there were 165,227 pianos built and sold in the United States alone. Contrasting that, in 2009, there were 53,870. Now, most people see that and they say, it's doomed. The piano is going to be relegated to the back room where it will rust and decay. Let's look at that lower number for just a second. If a piano tuner could tune 700 pianos in a year, which would give them an income of $63,000 a year. And that's just tuning, not doing repairs and other kind of maintenance that are regularly necessary. We could add 76 new piano tuners to the field of piano technology every year just to keep up with the demand of those 53,870 pianos that were produced in 2009. We're not doing that. In 1993, there were 2,500 registered piano tuners in the United States. Today, there are only 4,000. We're not keeping up. And I would love to have some more blind people who like to work with their hands, who love to work with people, who love music, and who want to make a good living, to come and talk to me. The School of Piano Technology for the Blind in Vancouver is still in business after 62 years, and we are looking for a new director. I have the opportunity to help look for my own boss, and so I'd love to find a wonderful NFB person to run the school. And I'm the director of instruction, and I like what I do, and I'm going to retire someday too, so I'd like to find another NFB to take my place. And the only place to find blind piano tuners to be teachers is to train them ourselves. So there's a great opportunity. That's how I got started, was to learn to tune pianos, thinking I'd go out and make a lot of money on my own, and instead I decided to work for the school and not make nearly as much, but I've had a lot of fun. So come and talk to me. I have business cards. I'm not in this hotel right now, but I will be after Tuesday. And my email address is very easy. It's D-O-N, my first name, Don, M-I, the first two letters of my last name, Mitchell, at pianotuningschool, all one word, .org. So I'd love to talk to you and share the wonderful world of piano technology.
Okay, if you want to talk to any of these people later, is there anybody else who has a job to announce? Okay.
We also need an adaptive PE teacher, so all of you sports-minded folks, we are going to hire someone to get our students in shape and teach them the joy of athletics and sports and physical education.
Okay, excellent.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Orlie. I come from Toronto, Canada. Yay, Canada! Woo! My husband and I are looking to move to South Florida within the year. My husband is American, so I will be legal to find employment. I currently work for a large bank in Canada. My past experience is always in customer service, and I'd like to find something that would be more towards the South Florida area. I'm not exactly sure how to go about doing that. I know in the U.S. French isn't really a requirement, but I do speak French and English. And I would love some input on where I could start looking and how I can get out there and find resources for employment in South Florida. Thank you.
Okay, Orlie, there is a rehab counselor from Florida up here. I'm going to let her. Did you get her phone number and all that? Okay.
Okay. Depending on where you want to work and live, and what part of South Florida are you planning on going to? Okay. I would probably suggest Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale, but the services in Palm Beach County are lacking, but Fort Lauderdale, I think, has better opportunities. Also, French might be useful in terms of the Creole population down there. Your skills could be used for that. Maybe contact Blind Services in Fort Lauderdale. I do know they have an office in Fort Lauderdale. Ivy Romero is the district administrator down there. Her name is Ivy Romero, Ivy, and she actually interviewed me for my job. Romero, R-O-M, I believe E-R-O, Division of Blind Services. I don't know their phone number, but if you go to www.myflorida.com/DBS for Division of Blind Services. You can find our website, or I'll give you my email address that will have my website on it. My name is Kelly James, and my email is kelly.james at DBS, D as in Division of B Blind Services, DBS.FLDOE, that stands for Florida Department of Education, correct, .org. And if you send me an email, just let me know, you know, remind me of who you are and that we met at this seminar. And I'll be back in the office on Thursday, and I will send you an email back with the website and Ivy's information. And I would suggest if you are moving down, I don't know if you're registered with Blind Services where you are, but you would you would have to close your case out with them. When you come down and reapply, when you move down here, apply for services. And if you're eligible, then you would be assigned a counselor, and they would, if they have an employment specialist there, they would assist you. But you can also do some legwork before and maybe research banks that maybe there's a Creole bank. I don't know. I know there's some Spanish financial institutions. So maybe do some legwork and research on that, and you'll have some things to work with your counselor, and then the counselor can assist you with any equipment that you might need for that job.
Okay, well, Creole, yeah, Spanish-speaking people.
Well, Creole, it's a dialect of French. So if you know French, you know, Creole, I would think you could learn it. You know, there's, I'm sure it's a little bit different than French, French Canadian, and, you know, there's different dialects. Right, there's different dialects of, you know, there's French Canadian, there's...
Yeah. All right, well, I'm, you will actually be able to ask even more questions here in just a moment, but I don't want to short this next lady. This is Bethel Murphy. She is one of the job placement people at the Louisiana Center for the Blind, and she's brought some of her friends. So this is open season here on Bethel Murphy. You know, you want to ask her questions, she wants to ask your questions, that's fine. This is, so if you want to ask questions, you want to show us resumes, whatever, I'm just going to turn this over to her.
Thank you. Like Dick said, I do have a few people here. I had asked George to stay, especially after hearing him speak this morning. And then I brought along Kelly Womack, who actually works at the center with me, and she works with students who are trying to get maybe their GRE, GED, SAT, you name it. So, you guys have any questions that have to do with pursuing those things, or why you need to pursue them to go to school, and if they're needed? Yes, Kelly.
I guess my question is for Kelly. Are there nationwide resources? I know Hadley provides their high school program for people that don't have a high school education or that dropped out of high school, but it does take longer than just getting a GED, taking the GED classes and the GED test. And I do have a lot of clients that are visually impaired that want to get their GED, and the tech schools in the area offer classes for free, but they don't know how to work with our clients. So what would you recommend?
That's kind of a problem that we've run into a lot. I'm just kind of slowly finding out about it, where we've had other training centers from across the country call the center and tell us that they were having the same problems. Unfortunately, you know, that is the case kind of nationwide, is that the GED programs that are set up in most cities are geared towards the sighted, okay? And so the instructors that are at those schools, they're not really trained to work with blind individuals or people with learning disabilities and things like that. So I don't have a good answer right now. You know, one thing that a student might consider doing is if they hire a reader to go. That's what I personally tell my students that now, I mean, I'm able to work with the students one-on-one, of course, at the center, but that's not always the case with other, you know, training centers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I would maybe encourage them to hire a reader that can work one-on-one with them in the class.
Okay.
And the thing is a student that is blind, they're going to have an IEP in place most likely.
Right.
And, I mean, you go to a GED, you know, center anywhere, and they have to honor that IEP. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean,
you mean an IEP like in school? Like when you're in school, I know about.
Yeah,
like
yes, yeah. But that, I mean, also though, you can get accommodations, you know, like when you're going to be testing and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what I'm saying is typically those IEPs will be able to follow you. You can carry those over. Okay. I have a contact in Monroe, Louisiana that is over the division in that area for adult education. And if you contact me at the center a couple of weeks after we get back after convention, if you contact me at the center, I can get you more information. I'm going to check with her just to make sure. But I do believe that, you know, I think that would be your best bet would be to hire a reader to go with you to work individually with you while you're at one of those GED centers.
Okay.
That way you can get one-on-one.
With the IEPs, I mean, a lot of these clients haven't been in high school for years, so they wouldn't, and some of them came from a different country.
Okay,
so
okay. Okay, and I totally understand that. I do believe, though, that I just can't see how that, you know, a GED center would have a problem with you having a personal aide working with you. If that person even has like a vision report or something stating that they need assistance,
mm-hmm.
Okay, because you can get vision reports from the ophthalmologist.
Well,
that
we have the vision reports in our office. We get them when they register for us because that's part of the
Ability. And that's what I would suggest that they just have with them, some type of documentation stating what their disability is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way you can kind of verify, okay, yes, I need somebody to kind of work with me. And because I just feel that, like I said, at the center I can work with the students one-on-one, and I just feel that you could get a lot more done in a shorter amount of time, mm-hmm. with individualized, you know.
Right.
So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
One of the other people that I noticed in the audience is Josh Boudreau. He is our Director of Technology. So anybody out there that might have questions concerning technology and being able to make accommodations in the workplace and his experiences with, you know, the things that maybe rehab has, you know, put their nose up to doing or not, you know, he might could give you some leeway on that.
Okay. There's been a little bit of turnover in the audience, but if you want to ask a question, just stand up and I'll bring a mic to you.
What would you recommend to someone who's considering grad school, especially in terms of preparing for the GREs?
Okay, online they do have, you can access some practice material at the GRE website. Are you proficient in Braille, or what would be your format that you would want to take the test in? Have you thought about that?
Not particularly. It would either be Braille or electronic, because I am pretty proficient with both the computer and Braille.
Okay.
So
okay.
It would depend upon what exactly is involved with the GREs.
Well,
what subjects do they cover and such?
There's a good amount of math in there. The vocabulary. You know, you have the analogies. There's two different types of essays, okay?
Probably Braille for the most part, then.
All right. And what you can do, if you go to the GRE website. I believe it's www.gre.org. And you should be able to look at practice test, or actually go to their contact information and call them. Go to the number. It should be listed for students with disabilities, okay? And you can actually order, I believe, and it's free of charge, the GRE practice test in Braille, and they should be able to mail it to you. Also, I'm going to give you the name of the lady that's in charge of the disability department there at GRE. Her name is Nora Hollenbeck. Okay? And if you tell her that Kelly from the Center for the Blind referred you, she knows me.
Could you spell that last name, please?
Yes. H-A-L-L-E-N-B-E-C-K. Hollenbeck. But tell her that Kelly from the Center for the Blind referred you and that you're trying to get some GRE practice material. Okay?
Okay. Other questions here? You guys can say whatever you want.
Yeah. I've got one question. Out of everybody that's sitting out there, how many of you guys have a job right now? Let's see a raise of hands. Okay. And that means the rest of you do not. How many are in school? Okay. So we actually have about a third out there. Okay. So, well, working is working, whether in my mind. Making money. Working and making money. Okay. I hope you guys brought some good questions, things, you know, we've had a lot of great speakers here today and an opportunity to ask questions, but, you know, if there's anything out there that you know, you've got on your mind that you want to ask, and nothing's too silly, crazy, nothing.
I can tell you one of the things that's really helpful when you want to go out and start looking for employment in whatever field you are, and I'm going to back up to what I've been on my stump about all along, but that's find whatever the local group or organization is. If you want to be a vet tech, go look at the Vet Techs Association. If you want to be a carpenter, go look at the, you know, carpenters, you know, the construction company sites and those kinds of things. But the other thing is that in almost all of these fields, whatever they may be, there are local specialties inside of all of those things. And an awful lot of them have certifications. You can go become a certified X, whatever that is. And almost every industry, whatever it is, has those things. If you're looking for a job inside of one of those industries and you're not yet employed, one of the things that makes you valuable to an employer is if you do have those certifications ahead of time. So it isn't an expense to them. They're going to hire you to do X, Y, Z. Then after they hire you, because they want you to do this, you have to go get the certification so you can work within the industry. If you go get the certification ahead of time, and then you go to that employer looking for the job, you are one step up above many of the people who will come in and apply. For the instance, if you were in the cabinet-making building business, the construction industry, and you wanted to work in somebody's countertop shop, and you went to one of the schools that certify solid surface fabricators to do solid surface work. If you walk into a cabinet shop and you say, I am a certified solid surface fabricator, your likelihood of getting employed over Joe off the street who just comes in and says, yeah, I build countertops, you have a big step up above those people. So whatever your industry is, go find out what the certifications are. A lot of community colleges run certification programs for all kinds of different industries. So go check those things out to see which one fits what you are. Sometimes the industries themselves have the National Kitchen and Bath Association, for instance, I'm talking about things that I'm real familiar with, has something that's called CKID, Certified Kitchen Designer. It takes about 2 to 3 years to get that certification. And there is a lot of written stuff and testing that is ahead of the practical experience. But if you go get the written stuff and those kinds of things out of the way, And then you go to an employer and say, I've done all these things because I want to work in this industry, and now I need the practical experience. You know, the employer can see, you're serious about this. I mean, so that there again, there's another thing that gives you a little bit of a leg up over, you know, maybe the other guy walking in off the street and says, oh, I just do this.
In addition to that, when you do have certifications coming in, some agencies, like, for example, if you're a certified rehabilitation counselor for the state, your salary will be $2,000 increase to someone without a certification.
Other questions? Anybody? Here's an individual up here.
Okay, for each job, there's a resume tailored, and I took a career class, and there's specific skills or at least work experiences that are, I guess, geared towards the job. Do you have any suggestions, like what to put in a resume? Because, I mean, everybody will have a lot of extra jobs that's very unrelated to the jobs that you really want to have, like, for instance, your desired job. What do you think is the best way to deal with this situation? Do I just put all the job experiences that I have in the past, all my volunteer work, all the organizations that I've been in, or do I just direct it specifically to the job that I want?
Okay, I think Dick and I both could probably speak volumes on this one, but depending on what the job is that you're applying for, I mean, with my students, I always work with them or ask them to kind of tweak their resume to fit the position that they're trying for, okay, and list their skills and abilities that they have that are skills and abilities that are needed in this job or are desired in this job. Also, you know, if you're somebody who has had 20 jobs in the last 2 years, you might want to think about that a little bit because then you may very well appear as someone who only goes somewhere for a very short period of time and then moves on. Or if that's the case, and all these things actually are the same kind of job that you're trying for, and it was always a matter of you making a move to make more money, to relocate to a more desirable area like that, then, you know, being prepared to explain that. And, you know, you got to keep in mind, too, that resumes are just kind of like a snapshot. It's something to pique their interest in you as an ideal candidate, and it opens the door for you then to be able to speak to them about more of the details associated. Did I answer your question at all?
Okay, I can add add a couple of things to it. Sometimes people wonder, about the employment gaps that were mentioned earlier. You can kind of obliterate that issue if you, under employment experience, you just put down relevant jobs or relevant experience. What that says to the employer is that you're leaving some things out. Well, you could be leaving some gaps, you know, between your jobs out too. But if you put in relevant, then that means to them that you don't expect everything to be there. The other thing that I teach people at Blind Incorporated to pay particular attention to the top half of the first page of your resume. I wouldn't generally go to more than two pages on a resume unless you're applying for a university or the federal government, in which you can go on kind of an infinite number of pages, and it'll only get better because these are the people who want to know every single thing on earth about you, particularly universities that want to know all the papers you presented and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But just put in the relevant stuff. I usually recommend to people, don't differentiate between paid and volunteer experience. A job's a job. Just put it there. And keep in mind that this is, the resume is a marketing tool for you. It's not to tell people, it's not that you're in court. You don't have to tell the truth, the whole truth, and everything but the truth. It's to get the employer interested in calling you in for an interview. And so if it does that, it's successful. I usually recommend that people put an objective on the top of it. Your objective should be the specific job for which you're applying. That makes it really simple. Don't put something like, I want a job in the field of such and so that will, you know, make it possible for me to utilize my skills and make me, you know, feel warm and fuzzy inside or whatever. Some people put that in and it means absolutely nothing. If you don't have a specific job you're applying for, but you know, say, for instance, food service management, put in food service management. You know, come as close as you can, but, you know, if you're applying for a specific job, say if you're applying for food service management at Wendy's, I would put food service management at Wendy's. You know, be as specific as you can. And then I usually have a person put a list of their qualifications for the job, and that can be, you know, specific work experiences or education, training, whatever you think qualifies you for the job. And that should get you about to the middle of the first page because the employer is going to take between 3 and 5 seconds. I've heard 3 seconds recently to look at that thing, and that's about as far as they can read. So that answers the question, what do you want to do? And second of all, what stuff can you offer me that will help me to make a decision about you?
Yes, we have a question.
I hope I can word this right. I'm wanting to do something like in either rehab or working with children, which I've always worked with children. As presently, I'm a licensed social worker, so I don't know if there's any jobs that would fit that criteria for a social worker, or what would the minimum of what I need to do to be able to tweak my credentials to be able to qualify for any jobs in those areas?
I'm not sure I'm understanding. You are now a social worker,
yes,
and
am.
You want to work in what field?
I would like to do something with either in rehab or working with possibly blind children. And from what I see, I'd either need a graduate's degree in, well, in something else.
I think you're going to need like a teaching degree. Uh-huh, yeah.
I do know of some people with social work masters that, and I know you have your license, so that's an up for you. But if you want to go into rehab counseling, for example, if you have your certified rehabilitation counselor, and you can get that, I think there's a couple of classes if you go on the CRC website, which is crccertification.com or .org, and it'll show you the classes you would need to take. I think there's three or four classes you would need to take to be able to sit for the CRC, and then once you have that, then you would be qualified to be a rehabilitation counselor if you providing all your experience and your knowledge education.
I'd be curious, are there any certain positions thus far that you have been looking into and tried to pursue, and what was your
really
response?
I've been looking, or I've been catching up on soap operas. But I need to do something, especially since they're canceling all my children, you know.
Ooh,
yeah, that's a soap opera job search. I used to tell people about the six-pack job search, which is that you wake up in the morning, look for job postings in the newspaper, you know, don't see anything you want, you know, kick back, kill a six-pack, you know, do the same thing in the morning. So you have this soap opera job search mode. But if you're in... No, that's an excellent use of your time because that falls under preparation, truthfully. And if you want to watch soaps, you know, get with our executive director at Vine Incorporated because she's a real soap freak too. But But if you're an LICSW, is that your license? LSW. Do you have an master's in social work? Okay. But I would say, you know, the field of work with the blind uses social workers. I mean, I know places that hire social workers. So why don't you take and construct your resume in such a fashion, you know, as to make an argument for why, you know, you would be good at that. And you can use your personal experience. I mean, you can use anything that you think is going to help you on that. But put something together and shoot it out and see if anybody picks it up at the other end.
I just wanted to know, do you guys have business cards?
Sure, yeah.
Could I?
Do.
Are you guys willing to hand those out? Or?
Yeah.
Excellent, thank you.
Definitely.
We'll put some business cards or whatever up front business so you can cards. Pick them up afterwards. Other questions?
I have a good job hunting tip for people. A friend of mine about a year ago landed a very good job. If you were looking for a job with a specific company, which he kind of was, he was looking for a job doing a specific kind of thing. So he was looking at several companies who dealt in those things. So he went to Google, and he went to the Google part of the Google search engine where you type in the news, and then you type in the name of the company that's in the news. And this friend of mine is a environmental engineer. And he wanted to work somewhere in the environmental business in Michigan. And he typed environmental, he didn't use the word catastrophes, environmental violations by major companies. And it brought up this monstrous list of different environmental issues where companies had been fined. And his previous job had been walking a company through difficulties with the, they got in trouble with the environmental people over a bridge they were building and didn't build a cofferdam correctly. And so he was looking and he saw in the news that a rather large contracting company had just landed a very nice contract to rebuild some dams on some pretty critical rivers in northern Michigan that are designated trout streams, lottie, you know, And so he called them up and says, I just worked, you know, spent the last, you know, 8 years working with XYZ company, and they had major fines against them for violations against the environmental agency over the construction of some bridges over, you know, on the other side of the state. And I see that you just were awarded contracts to build bridges across, you know, similar kinds of streams on this side of the state. Would you like my expertise? And avoiding the pitfalls of my other employer, instantly got a job. Instantly got a really good job. They hadn't even started the project. They had done nothing wrong. Their goal was to make sure they didn't do anything wrong because the other company paid, you know, millions of dollars of fines for their FUPA. So if you have an expertise or if you have worked, say you worked with a company where you were working there and the company downsized, and your job was to consolidate different departments into one department. You now have a very marketable skill in a downsizing economy. You can go out and sell that skill to other companies who you'll see in the news. You know, so you can sometimes capitalize on looking at what's in the news on a Google search. And take your past experience and tweak your past experience into something that can benefit the company. It may be a lot of fluff, but it may be exactly what someone's looking to do. Someone may have a problem, or someone may want to avoid a problem that you've been involved in. So what your skills are, you know, sometimes is really surprising as to how you can use them. You know, if I was in a company that was totally downsized. They fired everybody. I was the last one to go. Well, you obviously were the last one to go for a very important reason of some sort. I have a friend of mine in Michigan. She is a blind lady. Her name is Toni Dome. And the auto plant that she worked for was a small electronics company. And she was their very last employer on the floor that they had on the floor. And she claims it's because she was the only person in the plant that knew every single job in the plant. Because every time they wanted to make a change or something, and she never wanted to get laid off. So she would always take whatever, even if she had to go down in scale or grade or whatever, she always took whatever was job was there. And by the end, she knew every job in the plant. So she ended up being their very last employee. She'd worked there for 25 or 30 years, somewhere in there. But as they downsized, you know, she was the last person on their payroll. And she attributes that to the fact that she was the only person in the plant that knew every single job. So, but take your experience, whatever it is, and really sift through it. And really cherry pick your own experiences and figure out what your absolute expertises are. And then go see if you can apply that knowledge or expertise to some other area, you know, that's similar to what you have done. And it may be just in a college situation. You may have done something or something has happened in your college. You know, you happen to be part of the conflict resolution team at the college, and there was, you know, a major incident, and you were the person who was involved in collecting all the data. Really nitpick what you've done. Really sift through it and find the little tiny nuances of your skills that make you the most marketable.
Now, this is Brian Bash, and I just wanted to follow up. There's one very useful tool. I just want to follow up with a Google News tool. If you really, really want to work for a particular company, say it's Hewlett-Packard in Beaverton, Oregon, or something like that, you can go to Google News and plug in Beaverton in Hewlett-Packard or whatever your company is, and then you can make that a Google News alert. And so you don't have to think and remember every day to go in first thing and do this. Anytime your company of interest, your location of interest shows up in the news, it emails to you an alert. And you know, and the process of knowing that about the company in the weeks or months before the job's available will make you a very credible candidate when it comes to that job interview. So it's a really easy thing to set up, and once it's set up, it'll just keep letting you know what's available.
That's an excellent idea. I've heard that before here. I just wanted to let you know that our first vice president, Dr. Fred Schroeder, an old friend of mine and the former head of an important federal agency, and Susan Benbow, you know, his longtime friend and associate, are in the room here. Fred says he doesn't want to give a speech, which Fred always does extremely well, but I just wanted to tell him I was going to rat him out, so here he is, Dr. Trevor. And if you're interested in learning how to get a job as RSA commissioner, you know, I'm sure he can give you some career advice or tell you that you don't want to be a head of RSA commissioner and how to avoid being RSA commissioner. So thank you, Fred and Susan, for coming. Go ahead.
I wanted to go back to something that George was talking about here about your skills and your abilities. A lot of times it may be things that you're really not aware are skills and abilities that you have. It's these knacks that you have of getting something done or pursuing something or whatever. But, you know, there may be people out there who have never worked, have no idea what they want to do. Maybe they don't have a college degree. There's many ways of finding out kind of what your skills are. I mean, even as far as looking back at as you were growing up, things that you liked to do, whether it was working with your hands, helping others, siblings or whatever, you know, you can go through some vocational testing. The key about vocational testing, though, is answering those questions honestly. You know, you don't answer them based on what somebody else wants you to be or wants you to pursue. It needs to be something that you are honestly feeling. Are there people out there that have never worked? Is there anybody out in the audience who has never worked at all? No, that's besides me. Well, I mean, that's great. That's good. You know, and going through and doing volunteer jobs is a good way of developing some skills and abilities. So I just wanted to add that to what George said, because, you know, and what he described there about that person was that was ingenious. and look at the gains that person's got in doing that.
Yeah, and if you get fired by a place or laid off by a place, you might want to go down the street to that place's competitor mm-hmm. and say, hey, I used to work for your competitor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that a marketable skill? Probably there. The main thing is to come up with, if you get an idea, then by all means give it a try. Keep in mind that the National Federation of the Blind has tons of blind people in it who will be more than happy to advise you. And even though this seminar has to come to an end before Mrs. Jernigan comes and kicks us out of this room, some of us will hang around a little bit to answer any questions. Bethel, do you and everybody else have any last points to make? Okay.
I'm just glad to see you guys came.